The Athletic.
Hello, I'm Dan Bardell. Welcome to 1874, The Athletic's podcast all about Aston Villa Football Club. Joined as ever by global glorious Greg Evans and Holly Percival as well to chat things all Aston Villa. We're going to look back on the Manchester United game and we're also going to do a little bit on Everton as well. We'll have half of the Athletic's Everton team in the form of Greg O'Keefe on the show later to fill us in on all the gory details. How are we both, guys?
I'm brilliant, Dan. I'm fantastic. I woke up this morning smiling, looking out my window now, the sun's shining, the birds are chirping away and my room smelling like roses. I'm fantastic, mate. Really happy to talk to you as well.
Greg Evans loves the transfer window. You can see it radiating off him. Holly, you okay?
I'm good, thank you. I don't think anything I say will follow such an opening from Greg. So,
magnificent.
It was brilliant, but I am fine too, thank you.
Good. Actually, I might as well, as you're looking out the window and we've mentioned the transfer window there, Greg, we might as well come to you early whilst you're in such jovial spirits. See if you'll give us anything. Any sneaky transfer goss?
I'd love to give you some really juicy information, Dan, but I haven't really got any at the moment. No, I'm just waiting for some of my contacts to get back to me and hopefully I can provide some updates as and when. But if you keep an eye on the Athletic's live blog that Holly Percival runs so wonderfully well, we'll update you throughout the day.
I mean, not just Holly, we should say. Holly's not the only person that runs that blog, unless you are in charge of it, and I just didn't know that, Holly.
No, I know. It is across the whole news team. We work relentlessly providing updates on those news blogs.
Yeah, the news team are always on it, to be fair, as I found out in recent weeks doing the transfer show with a lot of you. Let's get started with the Manchester United game at the weekend then, Greg. I wasn't there. They didn't win. I've watched it back. First half, I didn't really enjoy. Second half, some really nice stuff and encouraging signs. And for once, Villa have come back from 2-0 down against Manchester United rather than the other way around.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? Was you on a stag do? I can't remember what you missed it.
Yeah, I was out in town. And then kept running into Villa fans all evening saying, what do you think of the game? I was like, I haven't seen any of it.
I really enjoyed it. I thought United started quite well and Villa couldn't really get out of their own half. They sucked the atmosphere out of Villa Park. And I was a bit concerned because I think it was 4 minutes and Villa had hardly strung a pass together. And it was almost like a role reversal from the game at Old Trafford. You know, Villa were struggling to sort of get going. United were on the front foot. They obviously got the early goal, a very unfortunate and uncharacteristic error from Martinez. And then they had the ascendancy of Man United. And when they went 2-0 up, I just thought, yeah, there's no real way back for that. But Gerrard's substitutions changed it and it was excellent towards the end. And look, wow, I mean, the atmosphere in Villa Park in those final 10 minutes was something else. I say that Man United sucked the life out of the fans in the first half. That they really did. It was so quiet in the first half. But those final 10 minutes when Villa got the two goals back, and if they'd got that third, I mean, bloody hell, that would have been some place to be inside because the noise was just incredible.
What would you put the slow start down to? Again, I thought they actually ended the first half quite well, like the last 15 minutes from what I saw when I watched it back, but it's a bit concerning. I feel like there's been a few times when Steven Gerrard had to come out at half-time and say, we had to get into them at half-time. I feel like he's used that phrase quite a lot more than you would like recently, as if they haven't had a good first half and they've had a slow start.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that I would say to that is, if there's a team that's got it in them to go and put a response in and have a good second half, I think you'd still take that because it's better than having a team that can't really produce anything. But yeah, look, you know, obviously Villa fans are looking for a full 90 minutes from their team. I think actually the introduction of Matic helps Man United massively. And I think the reason that Villa grew so strong towards the end was that they actually kept him on for too long. You know, he hadn't played for a while. He started the game really well. He was blocking off passes, making interceptions and tracking runners. But then his legs kind of went towards the end and Villa used that to their advantage. But the slow start, I don't know. I'd love to have a really detailed, accurate answer for you, but I don't know. And I don't think even Steven Gerrard knew because I asked him that question as well. And he just said, look, we had to get into them at halftime and remind them of their responsibilities. And luckily, we've seen a reaction.
Yeah, that first goal, Holly, it's just one of those things for Emi Martinez. I mean, he barely ever makes a mistake, but he's a pretty big one to make, wasn't it, there? But he bounced back because he made a lot of saves in that first half.
Yeah, I think, like most Villa fans, Martinez is up there with one of their favourites. So to see him have that error that was, you know, unforced and kind of potentially monumental in terms of affecting the game overall was really upset and disappointed. And you just can't not be frustrated when it's like an unforced error like that. But like you said, luckily Martinez stayed focused. He made some great saves, you know, because Alanga especially was applying quite a decent amount of pressure on the wide areas. So I'm glad Martinez could stay switched on and not lose his head, which a lot of goalkeepers can do quite easily. So I think Gerrard did a really, really sweet gesture, which was, you know, praise Martinez. And you could see him speak to him after the game on the pitch. And the next day posted, you know, on Instagram, his son in the Martinez goalkeeper kit and tagged Martinez in that. So you can just tell that Gerrard also understands his players and knows how much playing for Villa means to them. So that little gesture, I think, will have really helped Martinez going into the next game, because we all know Martinez is a perfectionist and will not stand for that kind of error.
Modern day man management, that is, utilising Instagram.
It is.
To get the best out of your players. That is nice to see from Steven Gerrard there. Luca Dean started Greg. I thought at the end of that first half, when I did think Villa were in the ascendancy, I thought he was a massive part of that. What was he like in the flesh from your vantage point?
In the first half, he was obviously on my side of the stadium. Obviously sitting in the Trinity Road stand, where the press box is located. So I got a good look at him, especially in attacking areas. His delivery was a huge improvement on Matt Target and other wide players. You know, even Matt Cash as well. The two of them haven't been very good or at the levels that they should have been with their crossing. So I noticed that as an immediate change. A couple of first half deliveries that he put in were excellent. The corner, I think, for Buendia's header was excellent as well. And then in the second half going forward, he opened up the Man United back line a couple of times, got him around the back and created a few chances. The thing I've always said about him ever since last week when he signed was, is he going to be any better defensively than Matt Target? Now, judging by his first performance in Villa colours, no different really for me. He had a couple of hairy moments, a couple of moments where he did well. But we'll have to just judge him on that in the times ahead. I think what we will definitely see, though, is an improvement in attacking areas. His delivery is incredible.
I guess if Gerrard wants to be a more front foot team, then he probably isn't focused on the defensive side so much. He'll want the improvement going forward, won't he?
I mean, yeah, of course, but you need to find a balance, because if you're conceding goals every game, then it's, you know, you're losing an advantage there anyway. You need to keep it tight. Needs to be a balance. And it's all well and good saying we want all these attacking players in there, but if you've got Coutinho and Buendia playing together, and you've got two flying fullbacks as well, there's a lot of pressure on the middle areas to block off shots and chances. So just got to get the balance right, but I think we're going to be excited, especially in these next run of six games, because Villa are up against teams who are in and around them in the table, games where they will be expected to go and take the game to their opposition, and hopefully we will see Dina and his attacking qualities.
Yeah, Morgan Sanson got a rare start, Holly. I can't say I noticed loads of him watching the game back, but obviously he made that mistake for the second goal and then booted a water bottle as he got substituted. What did you make of him?
Yeah, I mean, I think like most Villa fans have been probably wanting Sanson to do well and get that start and, you know, really show why Villa bought him in the first place. But I think ever since he signed and had issues with injuries and so on, he just still hasn't found that form that he's looking for. And I will hold my hands up and admit, the last podcast, I know that some people were questioning the fact that I thought that a left-back signing was more important than a defensive midfielder signing. And I think that Gerrard signing Dina over a defensive midfielder kind of shows that Gerrard is on that same line of bolstering his squad rather than adding so quickly to the midfield area. But if McGinn is out, I do not trust Sanson complicitly to fill that role in the same way that McGinn does. So I think Sanson has showed that, you know, Gerrard should be pushing to bring a defensive midfielder in before the window ends, but we also need a, you know, an added centre back. So it's where those priorities lie for Gerrard on that list. And so Sanson was rightly frustrated, so hopefully he'll kind of bounce back. But it was so frustrating after the Martinez error as well, to just have two errors lead to two goals for United.
Yeah, so Villa find themselves 2-0 down, Greg. There's a lovely compilation on YouTube of Manchester United watch-along fans saying the game's over at 2-0. Odd combination of people, I've got to say, all the different people that were on there. Coutinho comes on, the magic man. Instant impact, two touches. involved in two goals?
Yeah, I put a tweet out at 2-0 down saying there's still plenty of time for Villa to get back into this game. And I've got
rare that you do that and it goes that way. Yeah, usually you do it and it'll go the other way.
Quite a few comments and replies basically saying that I didn't have a clue what I was going on about. But
good engagement. All engagement is good engagement.
All good interaction. Yeah, look, you can't rule a team out, especially Villa at home. Okay, it's Man United and you never expect them to get anything against them purely because of the history. But if there's still 15 minutes of a game to go and Man United are pinned back in their own half, Villa are creating chances, it only needs one goal and that's all it took. It's really hard, isn't it, to analyse Coutinho's brief cameo, because he almost had an assist, but for a small interception from Fred that sort of took the ball away from him, so he won't get classed as his assist. And then he scored, you know, probably anyone on the pitch would have scored, admittedly. But
I think that's a harder...
Anyone on the pitch scores that. I mean, look, Dan...
Evans hasn't took that away at the back.
Well, any player on that Villa pitch at the moment scores that. But I'm not taking anything away from him. He's got into the position, he's converted it. And look, it's a brilliant start because that's just what he needed, because a lot of people had spent the week questioning whether he was going to be good enough still. And whether he is or not, we will see in the weeks and months ahead. But what this goal has given him is a really nice start. He'll be absolutely buzzing off it. All week he would have been training with a spring in his step. He's not quite ready yet. You know, he does need a couple of weeks to get up to full speed. But that goal will help him massively. And if he can go to Everton, a place where, you know, he's going to get a horrendous reception for his time at Liverpool, and then do something again on Saturday, hopefully he can build on that. But look, there's a long way to go. And other than the goal and the almost assist, which admittedly is excellent going off the bench, I didn't really see anything else in him. But I'm looking forward to seeing what happens if he does start or if he comes off the bench on Saturday.
It's given him a platform, certainly, and you know, that's all you can ask for, probably, in the briefest of cameos that he had. I actually thought, Holly, that he works hard. I think people think, you know, number 10, Brazilian luxury player. But he actually works really hard off the ball to close people down. But I think he just gave Villa that bit of impetus. And I felt like, I know it was only 15 minutes, so it's a slight exaggeration to be saying this, I did feel like he made Ramsey, Buendia at that point. I felt like they raised their games a little bit playing with him.
Yeah, definitely. I think you could see it in Ramsey and Buendia especially. It was just that new little bit of lease of life and little bit lease of confidence. And I guess maybe that's become from how well the training sessions have been going in the week since Coutinho signed. So I think it was great. Like Greg said, we'll have to see over the coming weeks if Coutinho can keep up that consistency and keep providing those crucial moments. But it is a really exciting start for Villa. I mean, again, you have to kind of question why Villa weren't converting in the first place. Danny Ings and Ollie Watkins just really were struggling in the final third, even though Villa had the second highest number of touches in the opposition box on the weekend. So it's just about converting those chances. And luckily, Coutinho was clinical and helpful in those. And I think his movement, like you said, on and off the ball were just unbelievable. He knows how to get in and around in between defensive players and the midfield area. And I think United were on the back foot a lot against us once Coutinho was on. So I think it's just seeing how much his work rate continues when, you know, the ball is more towards Villa's final third rather than the opposition's final third. So it'll be exciting to see if his fitness continues to develop, Kenny can continue to score goals. And I also just want to point out, like, Jacob Ramsey was unbelievable before Coutinho came on, and then a new lease of life when Coutinho came on. And I think he deserves as much of the spotlight as Coutinho does from the weekend, because Ramsey put in an unbelievable performance.
Yeah, I feel like Norwich away was his coming of age moment, and then on Saturday that was him saying, right, I'm here, I'm a big player at Villa now, and I'm going to be a big player for a number of years. He's getting better and better every week, Ramsey. From week one when he came on against Watford at half time, I thought there's something different here. He looks a different beast and he's having a really, really good season. Good to see Chuck Wameka come on and get involved in a goal as well, Greg.
The main difference for me, I think we can all talk. I said, you know, Coutinho will get the headlines for his goal and his almost assist. But I think Chuck Wameka was the real driving force on that midfield. I think he made a big difference. Man United players seemed scared of him. They didn't really know what to do. He lost the ball a couple of times, but he was really direct, purposeful. And he's going to be a big player for Villa now for the rest of the season, I think. And if Gerrard can use him like that more regularly, then he's going to get Villa a lot of points, I think.
Yeah, again, this is going to probably sound a little bit stupid to say. You mentioned he gave the ball away a couple of times. I don't mind people giving the ball away when it's not sloppy, when they're trying things. And that's how I feel about Buendia. I thought Buendia was excellent. I thought he had a really, really good game. I know he does give the ball away sometimes, yeah. But I've said it before, and he's getting better and better every week now, so you don't notice it as much. But I just like that he tries things. He doesn't mind giving the ball away. He's not a player that's going to look back on his passing stats at the end of the game and mind. Some players, I feel sometimes they pad the stats a little bit by just keeping things simple, knocking the ball around, getting the pass percentage up. Buendia doesn't mind giving the ball away because he's always trying to make something happen, and I really like that.
And he's really hardworking. You know, that often goes unnoticed, but I almost play a cam on him for the second half against Brentford. And he works so hard. He was jumping in between the lines, asking for the ball all the time, running from left to right into the middle areas, trying to win the ball back. The amount of times he actually jumps up and tries to win headers is pretty incredible for a very small number 10.
He scored one, didn't he?
You know, can you ever remember players like David Silva doing that? You just don't associate a silky skilled number 10 jumping up for headers in the middle of the park trying to win it. So that's what I do admire about him. He's got that tenacious streak. He's desperate to do well. And when he gets on the ball now, he's starting to make a difference. I mean, I'm genuinely enjoying watching him. The last three games, I think he's been excellent. And it wasn't so long ago that probably, you know, the Villa fan base, and me included, were saying, Villa wasted the money on him. You know, is he a little bit too expensive for what he is? But he's starting to show his real value now. And look, we're talking about the whole midfield in an attacking area as a real plus point for Villa. Got McGinn coming back on Saturday, who will make a big difference. As Holly said earlier on, there isn't anybody who can replace McGinn. He's so unique. Villa haven't got a like-for-like replacement. Sanson just haven't quite seen it in him yet. He probably had his best game in a Villa shirt before the bad error. But, you know, that will just add to his performance, unfortunately, and just make it another day to not remember. So, but you're looking at a lot of positives now. McGinn in the middle, Chukwuemeka coming on, Ramsey playing really well, Coutinho potentially doing well after a decent start, Watkins leading the line, Buendia, you know, excelling. There's a lot of plus points to talk about. And then if Dean can join in the attacks, you've got a really, really exciting group there moving forward.
Yeah, good to see Villa take a point, because I think that would have been four defeats in a row, which would have been a little bit of a confidence denter. And we know when you get to five, that's when you're in the real trouble. So Gerrard will be glad to knock that run of defeats on the head. Worth pointing out, as we've touched on, we talked about Coutinho a fair bit there. Michael Cox has written a piece for The Athletic saying that he thinks Coutinho is a great fit for Gerrard's preferred system. I read it earlier on in the week. It was actually a really, really good read, and it should give you signs of encouragement about how the little magic man is going to fit in at Villa Park. If you're not subscribed to The Athletic and you want to read that, you can do so at the moment with a 33% discount by heading to theathletic.com/villapod. You'll get full access to all the great writing, including plenty of fresh content from Greg this week and ad-free versions of all The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. So just head to theathletic.com/villapod for a third off a subscription.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Let's welcome Greg O'Keefe along from the blue side of Merseyside, The Athletic's Everton reporter, or one of The Athletic's Everton reporters. Very, very busy week for you, Greg, so we really, really appreciate you coming on. Rafa Benitez's departure, not the most strange sacking that I've ever seen in my life, but a lot of decisions that preceded it were pretty weird considering he's ended up going, weren't they?
None of it really makes sense other than, as you say, probably if you look at it in isolation, the decision to part terms with Rafa, the way results were going, the fact that you lose to Norwich and all of a sudden find ourselves 6 points away from the drop. But if you sort of work back from there, you allow the director of football to leave in December based on, I mean, that wasn't at Rafa Benitez's behest, but they weren't kind of working together. And, you know, I think Rafa was one voice of many that found issue with what Brands was doing. So he goes. Then you allow that the director of medical services, Danny Donaghy, really popular. I think he worked at Villa at one point. Really yeah, popular with the players, you know, sort of well-respected industry figure. You let him go very much at Benitez's behest because Rafa wants to come in and sweep through all the departments with a broom and bring his own men in. And then, as I'm sure you'll know, most sort of mind-numbingly, head-scratchingly of all, you sell one of your better players to a rival. And very much at Rafa's created this situation where he wins the argument, the club let him win the argument. And then 2 or 3 days later, you sack Rafa. So not only are they now minus one of their better players, the minor director of football, the minus, you know, some key appointments in the backroom staff, and frankly, they're lacking in a direction, or at the moment, it feels like an identity of what they want Everton to be off the pitch and on it, actually.
Yeah, Luca Dean, basically, there would have been no chance now. Say with this week and Villa are making a move for Luca Dean and Benitez has gone, there's probably little chance that Everton would let him go to Villa. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you are correct. I don't think they would have been looking to sell him anyway at the moment. You know, his performances hadn't been at the level that we'd come to expect from him. You know, his first couple of seasons, he was eight or nine out of ten most games, and had fallen off a little bit to probably sort of between six and eight at his best. But the quality was there. It was clear to see. It was just a case of maybe him being utilised best in a system. And he didn't feel he was by Rafa, and it was disappointing that Dean, on his part, there was a perception he wouldn't kind of just put the team before himself. So that was frustrating on the fans' behalf. But no one wanted to see him leave particularly, and especially not to a side who obviously were not competing in the league at the moment, but you know, at the start of the season, you'd be hoping to challenge for the same sort of areas in the table, I would have thought. So it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, really difficult times for Everton at the moment, but they have got Anwar El Ghazi in on loan. I don't think he was on Benitez's radar until Villa offered him or mentioned him in the talks with Luca Dean. What have you made of that signing?
Yeah, I mean, it was fair to say it wasn't one that got the pulses racing and got the fans captured their imaginations. It was, for starters, I think Benitez wanted a central midfielder. And there was thought that he wanted a winger, but the order that he was trying to do it was to bring in a central midfielder and then maybe at the end of the window look at a winger. I think it's symptomatic of some of the things that are wrong with Everton Football Club. You've got the owner and agents, Keir Jarabshan, who's a very close friend and advisor to Fahad Moshiri, putting players into the owner who then goes and signs them above the manager's head, or certainly, you know, pushes the agenda for them to be signed. You know, Rafa Benitez hadn't targeted El Ghazi. He wasn't on any pre-existing lists like Nathan Patterson or Vitaly Mykolenko, the two fullbacks we brought in. You know, Rafa didn't pick them, but they were previous club targets. He was just somebody who was effectively foisted on the club. I mean, you hear suggestions about why, and you know, it was kind of at the point they were at, they needed to then get Dean off the books because they'd gone and spent out on the two fullbacks, including Dean's replacement. So Villa needed El Ghazi's wages off the books before they could sign Dean. And so this sort of unhappy kind of transaction went ahead, certainly from Everton's point of view anyway. Greg wrote a really interesting piece about, he's spoken to him about a year ago, I think it was, Greg. And, you know, it does seem that obviously he's got a player who's got ability. I'm sure you'd tell me about his consistency issues. We as Evertonians know that he scored some really good goals against us, but maybe they're in parts like purple patches that don't happen enough. And yeah, it's a strange signing. I think the only sort of part of it that's de-risked, and therefore for a club like Everton who's overspent and made very, very many strange signings, is it's only on loan. So it's probably not the end of the world, but it is a symptom, I think, of a club that is dysfunctioning badly.
I think with El Ghazi, Dan, you'll probably agree with me, but it's so unusual for a Premier League team to sell or to let their second top goal scorer from a previous season go out on loan to a rival Premier League club and almost be deemed, not worthless, but just surplus to requirements, wasn't he? Just wasn't going to get many games. But that is just the story of El Ghazi. He delivers in terms of his numbers, but his performances and the consistency levels just aren't there, are they, Dan? He'll go through two or three games where he doesn't really do anything, yet then he'll have a run of five or six games where he'll score five or six goals. And look, I tweeted it out, Greg, if Everton play him and don't put him on penalties, they're missing the trick, because he's never missed one for Villa, and he's ice cold from the penalty spot. You know, that is the one thing that he's brilliant at.
Yeah, I had some problem with penalties, didn't you, the other week, Calvert-Lewin? I put him in my fantasy team. Yeah. Missed the penalty.
I mean, that was just classic Everton at the moment, yeah. You know, he's just come back into the team, hadn't he? So you can give him a little bit of mitigation, but it's a terrible penalty kick, wasn't it? But that's the way it seems to go when you suddenly find yourself with, the amount of breathing space reduced that we have down there at the bottom of the table. It's not where we thought we'd be this season, even though no one thought Rafa would be, or very few people thought Rafa would be a good idea, and many predicted it would work out as it has, although I'm not sure they thought it happened so quickly. But still, the ambitions were, you know, higher than this. And then, of course, I think, interestingly, one of the reasons why he kind of went was timing as well. I think the feeling was that the dressing room, it wasn't working. Tactically, he wasn't performing as you'd expect Rafa Benitez to do in terms of, you know, shrewd lineups and ways to win games. Regardless, he was actually doing the opposite. He was compounding the wider malaise with his own tactical errors. And then the fact that Villa are next up at Goodison in front of the home fans, Steven Gerrard coming back to Everton in the rival dugout, you know, Luca Dean,
Coutinho,
claret and blue, almost nailed on to set up a goal or score a free kick or something. It would have got, I can imagine it would have got really nasty at Goodison on Saturday. So that alone, I think the Rafa won't be there, will kind of give the fans a bit of a pick up and hopefully improve the atmosphere and by virtue improve the chances of getting some sort of result, because they can't afford to lose on Saturday.
Luca Dean will play. El Ghazi obviously will not play. Someone else who has joined Villa who will not play, well, I hope he doesn't play anyway, because that would mean something's happened to Emi Martinez, is Robin Olsen. Villa have signed him as a backup keeper over the last few days, Greg. What did you make of him last season? Because he was at Everton, and I remember him playing a few games, actually.
Yeah, he was good. He was a good goalkeeper. I mean, his pedigree was decent, wasn't it? He played well at Roma at times, you know, Sweden international. I remember speaking to a couple of people about his time in Italy, and they were just saying that in terms of the modern blueprint for a goalkeeper, he ticks all the boxes. He's absolutely massive. And Jordan Pickford is a great goalkeeper, but perhaps a little bit small, if you like, for a modern keeper. But Olsen is huge. And they were talking about his wingspan in terms of the sort of just how big he makes himself from sort of index finger.
Yeah, he looks like he's got big arms, and that's stupid for a goalkeeper to say about a goalkeeper, but no, his arms look massive.
Yeah, you're spot on. He's and we saw that really a couple of times, you know, that physical presence and that wingspan. You know, he made a few really good saves where he just shut down the attacker and closed the angles by his sheer size. He couldn't break into the team fully because Jordan Pickford, even though, you know, Olsen came in to really push Pickford, Pickford still kind of has the better sort of distribution and the better feet. And, you know, that's quite a valuable asset. And Olsen didn't have that. But that's not to say he had any particular weaknesses. I thought he was a really good stand-in. And I'm surprised he went, but I don't think that was down to Everton not wanting him. I just think he wanted to move on at that stage. And so Everton went and brought in, you know, another couple of goalkeepers, but not of his pedigree, really. So, well, I suppose you could say Peter Cech's had a great career as well, you know, older than Olsen, but nevertheless, you know, he's been around. But yeah, I think he'll be a really good backup. And as you say, you know, I don't think he's going to break into the team and knock Martinez out by any means, but yeah, solid keeper.
If I could just add to that, Dan, yeah, I mean, there'll be some supporters that will be, some Villa supporters that will be wondering why Villa have moved to get another goalkeeper when they already have, obviously, Emi Martinez as the first choice, Jed Steer as a pretty reliable and solid backup. I think if you remember, though, Villa let Tom Heaton go in the summer. So they were effectively a goalkeeper down. And when Gerrard came in, he looked at every department and said that he wanted two players in every position outfield, and that he wanted three goalkeepers, three senior goalkeepers. At times, Villa swapped between their young teenage goalkeepers and they put him on, they put them as the third player who will do the warm-ups in games with them. So they wanted three senior goalkeepers. Quite surprised actually that Greg said he did well at Everton, because I think I only watched him maybe once or twice in some of Everton's televised games. And I remember him having a particularly bad game, I think. I can't remember the game, Greg, sorry. But that's quite encouraging to hear that he did well in his other games, though, because if Martinez ever does pick up an injury or a suspension, you want somebody solid to rely on. And Villa have now got two to choose from, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, I've spoken to a few people at Sheffield United and they didn't exactly rave about him, and he's been playing in the Championship half season. But Greg's made me feel good about that. You've done a great job there of pepping up a second-choice goalkeeper coming in. It actually got me quite excited about a second-choice goalkeeper, so that was good. One thing I'm not excited about, and in fact I'm a little bit annoyed about it, is obviously we would have liked Rafa Benitez to have had another week, because I remember last time Duncan Ferguson took over, and he just lifted the place straight away. I think you won your first game. I remember him running up and down the touchline, yeah, celebrating with ball boys or fans and doing all sorts. And it was a great win for Everton. So I'm now worried that kind of thing's going to happen again. Because you've also got the Gerrard element, haven't you? And it feels like Duncan Ferguson will thrive off that Blues v Reds vibe.
Yeah, you're spot on. Yeah, you're spot on. Danny will. He'll use that to his advantage. You know, I'm sure he'll use it in the media in the next few days in his press conference. And, you know, Goodison has been a strange old place recently. The atmosphere can turn very quickly. The fans are just frustrated and fed up and angry. And it can be counterproductive for the team, especially when they're actively against the man in the home dugout. But, you're right, it must be frustrating from a Villa point of view. You know, that would have been certainly a massive help if it had been Rafa, but it does change. It flips a bit, like you've just said there. And, you know, Duncan got a massive bounce and a huge reaction from the players against Chelsea back in 2019 when he was the caretaker before Ancelotti came in. And he just, all the cliches, he just managed to encourage them to run that extra yard, throw in that extra tackle, you know, kind of put their bodies on the line a bit more than, because he's got the respect in the dressing room and he's got that sort of synergy with the fans. And I think you've got all the ingredients for a real bear pit atmosphere. Goodison now, you've got the villain in Gerrard, who's, you know, not very popular for obvious reasons. And you've got Duncan, the hero, back in the dugout. And it's a must win. So I think it does make Villa's task harder. However, you only have to look at Everton's form recently and some individual performers and, you know, sort of key areas. Michael Keane has been awful recently. You know, he's a confidence player, Michael Keane, and he's had no confidence at all. Benitez isn't the type to put his arm around the player's shoulders. He's not a leader of men in that regard. So whether Duncan can get into him quickly, I hope. But if not, he's made some shocking errors. And Calvert-Lewin hasn't yet clicked back into the form that we expect from him. So hasn't yet anyway. So, yeah, I'd still say, still be fairly confident for Villa coming. And, of course, Coutinho, I forgot. How can you? So there's like three, well, certainly two ex-Reds and then an ex-player who's going to be there. So, yeah, it's going to be a really exciting game. I'll be there on Saturday. There's so many subplots. And, Villa and Everton have had some absolute classics over the sort of last kind of 10, 11 years, haven't they? More so under Moyes. But I've got a feeling, I mean, watch this be a 0-0 bore fest now, but I've got a feeling it could be a really exciting game.
Yeah, I feel the same as you. Obviously the lunchtime kickoff as well, so it's got the TV audience. I think it'll be a really good game. Ferguson v Gerrard, one of those managerial matchups that makes you feel really old, because I'm pretty sure I remember both of them being young players, so that's not great at all. But yeah, thanks ever so much for coming on, Greg. Hopefully you don't enjoy the game too much on Saturday, but I wish Everton well after that, because I do like Everton. They're a great club.
Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/theathletic.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Do our news roundup, and I'm going to throw it to Holly first. There's a huge game for the Aston Villa women's team this weekend.
Yeah, there is. They travel to Leicester, and if Villa don't win that game, they are pretty much into a relegation battle between themselves, Leicester and Birmingham City. So Carla Ward and Aston Villa need a win. They haven't won since November. Granted, there's a bit of a kind of cool down period included within that, but they've really had a poor run of results. And you know, considering the really positive start to the season they had, you know, Villa are capable of pulling out results under Carla Ward. So hopefully they can get back to winning ways. But, you know, Leicester have got a lot more momentum behind them at the moment than Villa do. So it really could go either way. So it's definitely a game that people should tune in for, because I think it will definitely be feisty. You know, that kind of Midlands derby as well. So I'm definitely going to be tuning in, and hopefully Villa win.
Don't want to upset Carla Ward. I feel like she'll be very upset with how things are going at the moment. Unexpected, because she's a winner, really.
Yeah, oh, she definitely has high expectations. You could see she had that at Blues and in terms of wanting better facilities as well while she was at Birmingham City. And, you know, that was part of the reason why she decided to move on once the season was over. So now at Villa and a really good team and really good backing from the male counterparts, Carla Ward will expect the best from her team, and right now she's not quite getting that. So, like I said, hopefully Villa can return to winning ways. Otherwise, it's going to be a rough end to the season and potentially a relegation decider on the last game because they play Birmingham City. So it's going to be an interesting watch over the next few weeks.
We'll be keeping our eye on what happens with the Villa women's team on this podcast and just in general as well. Greg, you were at the under-23s midweek, a derby day defeat to Villa's feeder team, West Brom. What did you make of the game?
I think there was five ex-West Brom players in the Villa team. Not very impressive, Villa, to be honest. West Brom took the goal as well.
Surprising as well. It looked a strong side, that did.
Yeah, I think, to be fair though, West Brom did have a couple of first-team players in there. They had Kenneth Zahor up front and a couple of players who have played in the first team this season, fellows. And one more. But yeah, I expected a little bit more from Villa. I thought Louis Barry had spells where he looked good, but then missed a couple of decent chances. Brad Young up front didn't really go for him. Tim Erigbuna, was looking forward to watching him. I thought he had some decent moments, but then spoke to a few other people who were at the game and said that they didn't think he was at his best. Reiki had an all right game, but probably not quite as good as we know he was. And then you look at the back four, very, very young, couple of 16-year-olds in there. The most impressive performer for me, I thought, was a young lad called Jaden Barber, 16-year-old who played at both right back and left back. He's a current England youth international. I was really impressed with him. I thought he was good going forward, decent defensively. Reminded me a little bit like Kane Kessler, you know, that sort of mould. Could be somebody who Villa look to develop in the future, we'll see. But in terms of the result, no, disappointing one for Villa, and they'll look to bounce back on Monday.
On the plus, nice finish from Cameron Archer, Michael Owen 98 against Argentina vibes.
Yeah, sorry, I should have mentioned Cameron Archer because I think every game that I've been to this season that he started, he scored in, which is quite an incredible statistic. Considering I go to most games, you know, it's pretty incredible. Yeah, a brilliant, brilliant finish. I think that the goal has been clipped up and shared now on social media. So for those of you who haven't seen it, go and have a look at it. Brilliant, brilliant first touch and a superb finish. Interesting to see what happens with Archer because I know that Gerrard wants to keep him around. Gerrard would like three strikers in his group because he's obviously let Keenan Davis go out on loan to Nottingham Forest. There's lots of interest in Archer. There's about 20 scouts who were there on Monday night watching him. So it'd be interesting to see if any of those clubs, the majority of those in the Championship, are able to get him. And there's quite a lot of talk about Villa trying to get another striker, isn't there? So if there's any questions you want to ask me around that, I'll try and do my best to answer them.
Well, I was going to say, still could really do with another centre-back.
Yeah.
Fans desperately want a defensive midfielder still. And you've just said Villa are looking potentially getting a striker so they can loan Archer out. Little murmurs that Gerrard's looking to add some bite to his attack, Greg.
Yeah, look, I mean, we've all seen the Luis Suarez.
Passed you by, that gag passed you by.
Oh, I got the gag.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Didn't pass Holly by, but passed you by.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, a little bit slow off the mark there. As probably Luis Suarez might be at 34 years old now. but
isn't he older than that? I thought he was my age. I thought he's 36. He's 34, yeah.
So, look, we've all seen the links, haven't we? There's been some talk in Spain from well-respected sources over there. I'll see if I can put any flesh on the bone in the days ahead and try and confirm or deny any of the interest there from Villa. I know that Gerrard obviously got on very, very well with him at Liverpool and likes him. And he's certainly one who will be considered. Whether Villa push for him in this window, in the summer, or even either, remains to be seen. And I'll just try and do my best to update as and when I know.
Yeah, and while we're talking about transfers, The Athletic are recording daily transfer shows at the moment, bringing you exclusive news and insight on any deals during the January transfer window. Holly and myself feature on that show, so if you haven't had enough of us, do go and listen to that. The only place you can hear these podcasts is on the Athletic app or by subscribing to the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. You can start a free trial of that today. And don't forget the 33% discount as well on the Athletic if you're not already a subscriber. Head to theathletic.com/VillaPod. That will do us for today. Thanks to Greg, thanks to Holly, and thanks to the other Greg from the Everton side for coming on and talking to us as well. Pumped the game up quite nicely for us, actually. I'm really, really looking forward to Saturday. Have a great rest of the week. Thank you for listening. Up the Villa.
Athletic.